Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Jalik Rainwalker had a rough start to life, but he was always known to be smiling and generally very happy. In many of his photos, you can see his bright eyes and smiling face. Jalik was born to a drug-addicted mother in Albany, New York, and almost immediately was put into the custody of the child welfare system for the state of New York. Foster home life would be tough for Jalik in those first few years. In fact, most of his years. Finally, he landed in the foster home of Stephen Kerr and Jocelyn McDonald. Stephen and Jocelyn had children of their own, and they had other foster kids, and they would eventually adopt Jalik. But Jalik's troubles weren't over. Stephen and Jocelyn were having issues with 12-year-old Jalik and his behavior, specifically with regards to the other children in the home. Jalik was sent to a respite foster home to give Stephen and Jocelyn a break. A short time later, Stephen would pick up Jalik from this foster home, and they would go to Stephen's father's home for the night. When Stephen woke up the next morning, Jalik wasn't there. Stephen found a note that he believed Jalik had left, leading Stephen to think that Jalik most likely ran away. When a quick search turned up no sign of Jalik, Stephen eventually reported Jalik as missing. Jalik hasn't been seen or heard from since. Where is Jalik Rainwalker? And welcome to the Where Are They podcast and another unsolved missing person story. I actually covered Jalik's story for the first time a few years ago, and it's always one that has stuck with me. Not only is his story memorable and heartbreaking, when you see his picture, his smiling face, you can't help but feel connected to this boy. Before we dive into Jalik's story, I want to thank everyone who has left a positive review. These reviews really help the show gain a wider audience. And we know with missing person cases, it's a numbers game. The more people that see and hear these stories, the more times these names are searched on the internet, the more likely the right person will see the information. I also want to welcome our newest Patreon members, Shelley and Katie. Thank you for supporting our show. We couldn't keep this going without you. If anyone out there has any case suggestions for us, you can find all of that contact information in the show notes. I do appreciate all the ones that have come in lately, and I'm working to get them all scheduled. Some very good cases that I had never heard about, mostly, of course, because there is no media or not enough media coverage for them. Now, let's get into Jalik's story. Jalik Boyd was born August 2, 1995, on the kitchen floor of a home in Albany, New York. His mother was addicted to drugs, and she would lose custody of Jalik when he was just 2 days old. Jalik would enter the foster care system in the state of New York. For the first few years, Jalik was bounced around to several different foster homes. As he grew older, it became evident that he did have some behavioral issues and he would need special care. Still, it took a while to find a foster family that could take him in permanently. Jalik would find that family with Jocelyn McDonald and Stephen Kerr in upstate New York. Jocelyn and Stephen had children of their own, and they had other foster children in the home as well when they took in Jalik. In 2002, they officially would adopt Jalik. He was 7 years old. At this time, they changed his last name to Rainwalker, although it isn't clear why they chose that name for their new son. It would seem, however, that Jalik finally had a family to call his own. However, that family life wasn't quite stable either. The Kerrs lived in a small home in a very rural area. The home often lacked electricity. They sometimes used a generator. And the home also had no running water. The family used an outhouse. It seemed like a very untraditional lifestyle. Since the home had no heat, the family all slept together in one big room. Within a few years, it became evident that the Kerrs weren't quite equipped to deal with Jalik and his behavioral issues. He was allegedly becoming violent with the other children in the home, and the Kerrs would eventually file a request with the adoption agency to unadopt Jalik. Jalik also needed special medical care for his behavior, something that for some reasons the Kerrs couldn't provide to him. The state does offer respite homes where foster children can go to another home for a short time to give other foster parents a break. This was offered up to the Kerrs, and they decided to take advantage of it while they figured out what to do. Jalik would go to a respite foster home, and it was actually a foster home that he had been to before, and a foster mom who knew Jalik. The disappearance. On November 1st, 2007, Stephen Kerr traveled to this respite foster home to pick Jalik up. Jalik had spent 1 week in this home, and he was scheduled to be going to another foster home the next day. Stephen was going to pick up Jalik, spend the night with him, and then take him to his next foster home the following day. It seems a lot of shuffling around for this young boy, but I guess there were no other options. Stephen picked up Jalik that afternoon, and together they went to a Red Robin restaurant for dinner. After their dinner, Stephen took Jalik to his father's home, where they would spend the night, as it was closer to this next foster home they would be traveling to for Jalik. They went to bed for the night with everything seeming normal. The next morning, Stephen woke up and noticed that Jalik wasn't there. He took a brief look around the home, and he couldn't find the boy. A quick search outside turned up no sign of Jalik either. He then went back inside the home where he eventually noticed a note had been left behind where Jalik had been sleeping. The note read, quote, "Dear everybody, I'm sorry for everything. I won't be a bother anymore. Goodbye, Jalik." End quote. This note led Stephen to believe that Jalik had run away from home. Not sensing an immediate urgency, I suppose, Stephen decided to take a shower, get ready for the day, and then go out and run some errands. When he was done and back at his father's home later, Jalik still wasn't home, Stephen finally decided to call the local police and report Jalik as missing. It was November 2nd, 2007. The search. Authorities arrived on scene and spoke to Stephen. After looking at the note Jalik had left and learning of his troubles, his behavioral problems, and the fact that he was being shuffled between different foster homes, they initially thought, as Stephen did, that Jalik most likely did run away. But pretty soon into their investigation, they noticed that Stephen Kerr had some pretty odd behavior. They started searching the area and talking to everyone in town to see if anyone had possibly seen Jalik, but no one had. They would eventually find a surveillance video from a business, and this camera had caught an image of Stephen's minivan driving up and down a road very close to the river that ran through town around midnight. Stephen had insisted to authorities that he was home at that time. Detectives also went to visit and speak with Jalik's respite foster care parents, the one he had just been with. And when they were shown this note that Jalik had supposedly left, they indicated that Jalik actually had to write that note a while back, several months ago, in fact, when he was in trouble for fighting with the other children in the home. It was an apology note that the parents had asked him to write. They did confirm it was definitely Jalik's handwriting, but they insisted that it was written months earlier. Stephen and Jocelyn did some media interviews, and many noticed right away that Stephen's behavior was very odd. He would laugh and he would joke and he would sometimes make silly faces at the interviewer or at the camera. And I've seen these interviews, and it's honestly the most bizarre interview for a missing child that I have ever seen. In fact, it's the most bizarre interview I likely have ever seen of any kind. Authorities asked both Jocelyn and Stephen to take a polygraph test. Jocelyn agreed, and she was said to have passed that test. Stephen refused. Pretty early on, law enforcement declared that Stephen was a person of interest in this case and that they were leaning towards this case being a likely homicide. However, they had not ruled out that Jalik had possibly left on his own accord, but Jalik was only 12 years old. If he did run away, where did he go? How did he get there? This is when Stephen offered up the possibility of Jalik joining a gang. And if this seems out of left field to you, it did to me also. However, if you watch Stephen's interviews, it is clear that almost anything can come out of this man's mouth. Jalik's grandmother, Barbara, Jocelyn's mother, believed that something did happen to Jalik. She took to the media to beg for help, and she continued to search for the boy, pleading with Stephen and Jocelyn for answers. Soon, Stephen and Jocelyn packed up their family, abandoned their upstate New York home, and left for Vermont. They cut off all communication with Barbara. Barbara was sure that Stephen and Jocelyn knew more than they were saying, and in frustration, she went to that abandoned home one day. She broke in to search for any clues on Jalik's whereabouts. In addition to finding the house in complete disarray, she found a yellow fleece jacket that had been Jalik's. This was the jacket that Stephen had described to authorities as what Jalik had been wearing when he vanished. She called authorities to turn it in, but they were actually more upset with Barbara for breaking in and trespassing to get this sweatshirt. However, it does raise some questions. Take a listen to this clip from an interview that Barbara had with a local news media station.
She's certain he's not alive, but says someone has to speak for him.
I'm not angry. I'm just, there's no closure. It's like, is Jalik buried? Is he in the Hudson River? Is he in Connecticut, you know, New Hampshire? Or, you know, there is that 1% possibility that he would be alive, you know, and it's just not knowing. When a child goes missing, a parent needs to know where that child is. And so I feel like they know.
That's Barbara Reilly, the mother-in-law of Stephen Kerr and the mother of his wife, Jocelyn. She tells me they don't have a relationship anymore. Like Chief Bell, she has questions about inconsistencies in the story told by Kerr.
Barbara had continued to speak out in search of her grandson and believes that Stephen and Jocelyn are responsible. Because of this, she is estranged from her daughter's family and hasn't spoken to them since shortly after Jalik disappeared. The police department did conduct a search of the Hudson River as well. Now, the Hudson River is quite a large river that runs through Greenwich, New York, and this is the river where Stephen's van was seen driving next to in the middle of the night. However, they found nothing to lead them to Jalik. The search continued for Jalik over the months and then years with little to no clues. Stephen Kerr remains a person of interest. In 2008, several anonymous letters were sent to various media outlets in the nearby Washington County area. The letters were typed, they were all identical, and they were all postmarked January 28, 2008, from Westchester County, New York. Westchester County is about 3 hours south of Washington County. This typewritten letter was quite bizarre. This is what it said, quote, Jalik still alive. Needed a foot soldier for this war on drugs. Picked him up Route 40, Post 30. He's okay. No fake. He says, ask his mama and papa, who are the Macaroni family? My cat named Diamond. Why does Franti yell fire? Don't try to look, we are not there. End quote. Of course, this letter makes little to no sense. There is a question in the letter about his cat named Diamond, and Angelique did indeed have a cat named Diamond. Was this letter sent to make people believe that Angelique is indeed still alive out there? Who sent this letter, and why is it so mysteriously, oddly written? In 2012, the missing person case of Angelique Rainwalker was officially classified as a homicide. Sadly, the police chief in charge of Angelique's case passed away in 2018. He was very passionate about finding this boy, and the department has vowed to continue his work. Authorities in Greenwich have never considered this a cold case, and they work it just as hard today as they did in 2007. Greenwich, New York. Greenwich, New York is a small, quaint village in upstate New York in the Adirondack Mountains. Greenwich is on the eastern border near New Hampshire and is the southernmost town in Washington County. In 2000, the population of Greenwich was just under 5,000 residents. It had the all-American small town feel, and it was described as a rural paradise. The Hudson River runs through the town and is a beautiful and favorite focal point for the town. Greenwich is also surrounded by mountains, lush greenery, parks, and lakes. A few notable famous people actually came from this very small town of Greenwich, which is definitely a neat feature for the town seeing as how small it is. But Greenwich was the home for Susan B. Anthony, Grandma Moses, and Hal Ketchum. This is the town Angelique lived in with his family, on the outskirts of town. This is also where Angelique would disappear from. It seemed the river was a focal point at one point for the search for Angelique, but nothing was ever found. And if you're unfamiliar with the Hudson River, this is a big river, 315-mile-long river, starting from the source at Lake Tier of the Clouds near the base of Mount Marcy in the Adirondack Mountain Range, and it flows down and empties into the New York Harbor, leading into the Atlantic Ocean. While it seems like there is a multitude of places one could hide or go unnoticed in this whole area, it's important to remember that Angelique was only 12 years old, and the search efforts for him over the years have been pretty intense. Some college classes have even volunteered their time to come out to the area to investigate and search for Angelique. Everyone in and around Greenwich, New York, knows the story of Angelique Rainwalker. So what do you think happened to Angelique Rainwalker? Did he run away? Do you think he joined a gang, as Stephen Kerr suggested? Was he taken, possibly against his will? Or is Stephen most likely the person who caused Angelique's disappearance? I'm definitely curious to know your thoughts on this one. Angelique is described as a biracial male standing 5'6" tall and weighing around 105 pounds when he was last seen in 2007. He was 12 years old then. He would today be 28 years old. Angelique has a slight speech impediment which causes him to pronounce the letter R like the letter W. He was said to be wearing a bright yellow fleece pullover, a gray t-shirt with the image of a dragon on the front, blue jeans, and black canvas high-top sneakers. However, we do know that that bright yellow fleece pullover was later found left behind in the family's abandoned home. Anyone with any information on the whereabouts of Angelique Rainwalker or any information about Angelique at all is asked to contact the Greenwich Village Police Department at 518-692-9332. Thank you so much for listening to Angelique's story today. Sadly, yet another child that seemed to be failed by so many people, including Child Protective Services. With all of the issues going on with Jocelyn McDonald and Stephen Kerr and their home life the way it was, many people question, why were they able to adopt Jalik? Why were they able to have and care for so many foster children? We simply don't have any answers for that, but it's a question that we need to continue asking. If you've made it this far and would like to help us spread awareness of these unsolved missing person cases, please consider following the podcast and leaving us a 5-star review. This will help the show get shown to a wider audience. You can also follow us over on the socials. You can find us on Instagram, X, Facebook, and YouTube. All of those links will be in the show notes. A big welcome and a huge thank you once again to Shelley and Katie for joining us over on Patreon. If you'd like to join us there as well and have access to ad-free episodes and bonus episodes, you'll find that link in the show notes as well. Feedback and case suggestions are always welcome. Please send me an email anytime to canwefindthem@gmail.com or hit me up on the socials. Thank you again for listening to Jalik's story today. If you had heard the Q&A episode that was up for subscribers and Patreon members, I did mention that this is one of those cases that I always think about when people ask me, what is the case that had the most impact on you? What case do you remember the most? And there's several that do pop into my head, but almost the first one every time is Jalik Rainwalker. I really, really pray this is one of those cases that we can have answers to very soon. We will be back again with another Unsolved Missing Persons episode. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.